Who doesn't like crashing parties? I'm not sure if it's considered crashing a party if you get an invitation, but there have been a couple of those parties that I've crashed here in this last week. Kind of places that I probably would not normally be, but as a priest, in some way, I'm called to be there. One of those wonderful groups I was with so many mothers in our parish and even beyond in the community. The so-called MOPS, the Mother of Preschool Groups that form and gather regularly on Thursday, Friday mornings. It's a wonderful, wonderful thing that we have for these young mothers to come and to grow in faith and communion and foster the sense of communion and community together. I did speak with the mothers about how my mom is part of a MOPS group, in fact, and some of them let out a gasp to think she must be rather old to have preschoolers. She has a son who's a grown priest. And then I let him know the MOPS group that my mother's part of is a mother of priests group. And I said, wouldn't it be beautiful if some of these preschoolers one day would grow up to be priests? There was another party I crashed this week, and it was in fact just yesterday. I see some of those here this morning, and it was the Soul Sisters, some of the widows in our parish, those who have lost loved ones, lost husbands. And they gathered to anticipate the joy of Christmas, but also to reminisce together about the challenge of these holiday seasons, realizing and remembering so many of the memories through the years, and yet hanging together. I love the beautiful contrast, the MOPS group and the Soul Sisters. They both taught me a great theme, that we can't stand alone, but we need community. We need this parish. We need to belong. We can't just believe on our own, but we need to belong. It was a very poignant conversation. One of the ladies yesterday just kind of spontaneously said, I've got an idea, take it or leave it. And she said, what if we each shared one memory from our childhood growing up about the way that Christmas was celebrated in our homes? And so we went around the room, went from all these wonderful Soul Sisters to me, and then back to more Soul Sisters as we made the whole round around the room. It was a beautiful thing to witness. I wish you all could have been there. I wish we could have had it recorded. It was a very nostalgic time. Beautiful and prayerful gratitude, thinking back to so many memories, not all joyful. Sometimes a couple of the people said, my family and childhood growing up was perhaps not so memorable, was perhaps not so joyful. But when I got married and we began a family of our own, then we began some traditions, some living traditions that were how we celebrated these holy seasons of Advent and Christmas. I think one of the common themes across all of them was the idea of the simpler times, the way things were. The way things have become, there was a strong contrast, and this happened in one lifetime. One generation, we saw the way that Christmas was anticipated in the weeks leading up to it, and the way that our culture has pulled us along. As we celebrate this Advent season and think about the something new that the Lord desires to do and to be for us, let's remember that we don't learn from the culture how to celebrate Advent. In fact, the month of December is given to something very different from what we anticipate and focus on in the season. For much of the world that was once Christian but has lost Christian faith, the month of December is kind of like the residual effect of Christ's coming into the world. We still know we're supposed to do something special. This month of December, maybe to cheer us up who live in these hinterlands of the north, needs something to remind us. We need more Christmas lights, more gifts, more eggnog, more cookies, you name it. But I would suggest that the culture has hijacked, has taken the beautiful season of Advent preparation and turned it to very different ends. And so what do we have to do as we ask, what is the new thing the Lord desires to do is actually to recover the season as the church intended it. Very much like that first reading, we hear that when the Messiah comes, the new thing he will bring about is not simply something new that has never been seen, but a sort of restoration, a sort of recovery of the original order and harmony of God's creation. When he talks about all those animals getting along, when he talks about the peace that will exist on God's holy mountain, it's not something that has never been glimpsed before. In a way, it's a restoration of what God originally intended in the Garden of Eden. That kind of order, that kind of harmony, that kind of peace. Likewise, I would suggest that in this season in which the culture is so intentionally pointing us and directing us that more and more and more and more is better. I would suggest we would do well to let the Lord, to let the Messiah who has come, restore and remind us of what this is all about. Think about your homes. I think about what the Soul Sisters said yesterday. We didn't focus on Advent preparation, but many of them, by the absence of what they said, reminded me that it wasn't always so that all the decorations came out after Thanksgiving. This was not that many centuries ago. Excuse me, they're not that old. It wasn't centuries. It was decades. Many of their experiences said that actually decorations didn't even come out until Christmas Eve. In fact, in some cases, in some of these rural experiences and family life, the children went to bed and Christmas Eve, the house was still quiet and undecorated. And it was waking up in the morning of Christmas that there the house and the tree, even with the simplicity of popcorn garlands and all the simple things that were made at home, were all put out. As I've been living in these recent days, I've been thinking about how less is not anymore more. But rather, I've seen the newspapers somehow swelling with more advertisements. I've seen the soundtracks in the stores and playing on the radio. More music. The inboxes, whether advertisements or other notes or invitations, more invitations. Homes that have more things to look at, more things to distract. There's nothing wrong with all of this, and I'm not here to be a Christmas Scrooge. But Advent has not ever been a season about addition. In fact, it's a season focused on subtraction. And if you're in school and you know the difference between addition and subtraction, the goal of subtraction is not having more and more and more and more things to look at and to be interested and to be distracted by, but is rather to wind up with less so that we can discover in that less that something new is born. How many years have we spent this Advent season? How many Christmas Eves have we passed? How many Christmas mornings have we woken up to rejoice in the gift of Jesus? Some of you in your own lifetimes have seen drastic changes in our culture. Perhaps as the culture says, do more, buy more, create new traditions, we get simply weary of all the expectations placed upon us. They all have to be fulfilled. We have to send all the Christmas cards we always did. We have to put up all the decorations we ever did. Or do we? My invitation today is to realize that less is more. Keep it simple. In fact, in the liturgy, even though it seems like some extra things, some candles here, some incense there, the liturgy in this season here at Holy Name is very much focused on subtraction. We eliminate the great Christmas hymn that we sing almost every Sunday of the year. There is no Gloria that will be sung until Christmas. And there are actually two dates on which we sing it. One already happened, the Feast of St. Andrew, and one is coming up this coming week, the Holy Day of the Immaculate Conception. But we do with less so that on Christmas Eve and on Christmas morn, we can rejoice with the angels that Christ is born. The darker lights, the dim setting of the lights as the Advent candle is brought in, is another aspect of subtraction. The Advent hymns instead of the Christmas carols that we already hear on the radio. Perhaps, and this might be controversial, I don't want any of the kids to come after me, there are still donuts being served, but what if we did with less sweets now so that when the sweets of Christmas come, we could have that be part of our rejoicing, part of the reminder that something new is happening? What if there was less buying so that we could receive more in the gift that we do get, in the gift that we do give? What if we entered this Advent season as we never had before? I was inspired, I must say, by the Soul Sisters in a way that I didn't anticipate. Yes, there was Christmas cheer in the room. Yes, we were hanging together, realizing that we need community. We need joy. We sang lots of carols. But the invitation made by these readings is perhaps not to add, not simply to keep up with expectations, to do more and more, to fill our lives with more and more. Because little by little, those more and more become routines that become ruts, and that leads to endless restlessness for novelty. We're not satisfied with the old games, so we want new ones. We're not satisfied for what we had in the past, so we want something new. In this Advent season, let's be willing to follow after the Lord, to follow that little child who guides all the figures in that first reading, let's allow the Christ child in his simplicity, in his poverty, to guide and lead us into the joy of the season. It's been said that insanity can be defined as doing the same things, but expecting different results from those same things. If we're living Advent as we always have before, should we be surprised that we come to Christmas and our hearts aren't overflowing with the joy that Christ brought into the world? I'd like to look at the gospel because I think John the Baptist's presence and words are so poignant today on this theme that less is more, that perhaps subtraction will lead to greater fullness, greater fulfillment. It's hard to feel the thrill, hard to feel the true and everlasting electric moment, the novelty of that first Christmas as the fulfillment of every longing of the human heart, because we're so saturated, we're so full, we're so sometimes full of ourselves. Let's realize that when John the Baptist appeared, he appeared on the scene, yes, as a strange figure, after centuries of waiting, he emerged suddenly, like the sudden sounding of the voice of God that was startling, like the hysteria of all the people from Jerusalem and Judea and the region around the Jordan going out to meet him. There was, in the arrival of John, something remarkably new, something remarkably old. And what it was after 400 years where there had been no prophet in Israel, there had been silence. There had been no prophet. Like in the time of Samuel, we heard that there were no prophets and the voice of the Lord was scarce and visions were infrequent. John the Baptist appeared in a time like that. And it was after that darkness, after that silence, after that waiting, that John the Baptist said, "Repent, the kingdom of heaven is at hand." There's a very unique difference in the message of John the Baptist. All the prophets before him had said, "Repent. If you go on sinning, you will miss the inheritance that God desires to give you as his promised people." But John the Baptist added not just repent, not just shape up. I understand that Father Arnold used to say shape up is the theme of the second Sunday of Advent. But I would suggest that John the Baptist's message is something new because he says, "Repent because the kingdom of heaven is at hand." What a beautiful thing for the final prophet preceding and preparing the way for Jesus Christ, the way for the Messiah, to remind us not only to shape up, but to prepare our hearts for the one that we have longed for all our lives long. And not just us, but all the human centuries before us have longed for. It's so obvious that John the Baptist's appearance, his suddenness, his mysterious strangeness, the way he's dressed, what he eats, the message that he has, is flowing from his deep relationship and contact with God. As we ask the question, what was his preparation to do this? What were his credentials? What university did he go to? What was his religious formation? He spent time with God, and he allowed God in the poverty and the simplicity of the desert to ready his heart for the coming of the something new that the Lord desired to do. Never forget that John the Baptist, even before his birth, while he was still in utero, he met Christ in the moment when Mary went in haste to visit her cousin. Perhaps he spent his childhood growing up with Jesus, but he anticipated that fulfillment and that revelation when Jesus appeared on the scene, come to redeem and to save and to fulfill all the promises, all the prophecies. Yes, John is a pointer, a signpost, a sort of finger. I was visiting Faith Formation rooms this last week, and I described each Advent candle as like a finger pointing to the flame. Think of the finger pointing to those flames. John the Baptist was just that. "There is one coming after me," he said, "who is mightier than I. I am simply a voice announcing the coming of the Word made flesh." We know it's not polite to point. I shouldn't be pointing at all of you. But John the Baptist understood that his life was not about him. His life was not about filling himself, but rather in becoming small, in becoming empty, in becoming less, so that Christ could be glorified in the world. Let's not lose ourselves in the frenzy that the culture invites us into. Let's not divert ourselves or distract ourselves from the essence and the truth that this season would have us confront face to face. G.K. Chesterton once said, there are two ways to get enough. One is to go on accumulating more and more and more and more. The other is to desire less. I think that desiring less we will find is actually desiring more. Desiring more of what matters. More of those relationships which are so important and life-giving. More of that silence for which our hearts have been made. I'm going to invite you once again, as I did last week, into the jarring silence. It might be uncomfortable. We might say to ourselves, what's supposed to be happening? Shouldn't something be being said? But let's let the silence and the diminishment, the subtraction of this season, prepare our way for the something new when Christ will come to us and be born once again into the world.